Hey, you. You're a wild honey child. Welcome, everybody. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I'm Brian, that's Luke, and you're listening to Ian Asbury of the Cult, a very long-haired man with lots of makeup. Welcome, everybody. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. You're listening to us in the southern swath of Wisconsin in Waukesha on 540 AM and 101 FM, the Shaw, as well as Madison on 1580 AM and 92.7 FM. Always streaming at the Devil Radio app. You can get that wherever you hunt for your apps, dress them and kill them and put them in your phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give that app a download.
Yeah.
Wherever you harvest your apps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, Brian, we're talking about what do Republicans stand for and the inconsistency. And so we wanted to take this next segment and devote it to the filibuster, because last night the U.S. Senate decided that it was going to hold a vote on whether or not to overrule the filibuster to attempt to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And it failed. 52-48, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema joined the Republican caucus, all 50 of them, in voting against that overhaul of the filibuster for that bill. So a lot of people are up in arms, Brian, about this. And you and I debated whether or not we wanted to talk about this today, because it's taken up a lot of airwaves already. But I was like, let's have this conversation.
I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing ever. One, if you want the filibuster passed, just wait till the Republicans get control. They'll pass it in a second. I wouldn't even put it past Manchin and Sinema to vote for it then. Because they've already done it twice, as you've mentioned. They've already rammed through three Supreme Court nominations by getting rid of the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I like the idea of having to get 60 votes. And the only reason is because I'm a person who this country wants to build a consensus. This country wants to have democracy. And 50+1, yes, that's a majority. But again, I think any given law has more weight if it has a 60. Making that a requirement or not, that can be argued or not. I like it on the principle of the thing, but I would argue that the issue isn't necessarily the filibuster specifically. It's that you can't reason with the other party, no matter which party you're looking at from. There's no give or take, and I have data to back it up.
Brian's bringing the data, and I'm going to sum Brian's argument up as a really big, fuzzy, warm hug that if it was true, it makes you feel good, but that's not actually, because I agree with you on one instance. As soon as Republicans have control and Mitch McConnell is the majority leader again, even if that were to be under the instance where he had 50 votes and the vice president was a Republican, and therefore they had the deciding factor of the makeup of the Senate. If the roles were reversed, if the shoe was on the other foot, like a lot of Republicans and conservatives are contending, I will let you know without a doubt that they will nuke the filibuster whenever and anytime they see fit.
He didn't even wait like a day before when RBG died to go and try.
Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed 8 days before an election. There is nothing Mitch McConnell won't do.
Who said Merrick Garland.
You cannot even hear a Supreme Court nomination in an election year. He did it 8 days before an election. Votes were already cast in the 2020 election when the Amy Coney Barrett's nomination was forced through the U.S. Senate. So I completely agree with you.
You should have shame.
But they don't, Brian.
And they don't.
But they don't. And I wish it worked. I wish that the filibuster fostered bipartisanship in the U.S. Senate. It would give me a warm, cozy feeling inside, too. But it doesn't do that.
Since
the increase of use of the filibuster, there have been nominations stalled on both sides. This has been an increase since George W. Bush's administration. It has been slowly upticking. And to think that as soon as Republicans have control of the U.S. Senate again, which they could likely have in 2022, that they won't go and nuke the filibuster as soon as it is convenient for them is ludicrous to think.
I agree with you there.
We're fighting with one hand tied behind our back. We're insisting that we have to be decent, and we are the ones that have to follow the rules. And Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema think that this is what is good for the body of the Senate, and they are going to be royally screwed as soon as they lose the majority.
I get you. I totally understand this. I hear you, and I see you, and I understand. However, it feels like, and it sounds like to me, the same type of thing like, well, let's just get rid of the filibuster and then we'll scrub ourselves with steel wool afterwards.
That's 100% what it is.
But that's the point. You look at
Because
Clayfish who's saying the same thing. But my point is like, I feel like...
That's what they're contending for this whole thing. But their whole basis of that, Brian, is based on a lie. That basis is that the 2020 election was stolen.
Yes.
Merrick Garland's seat was wrongfully withheld from him for 13 months, and then Amy Coney Barrett's seat was jammed through in 8 days. That's real. The election in 2020 was not stolen. That is fake. So the fact that we're trying to compare those two arguments on the sides is not – you're using their argument that is not based in reality to argue that point.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it feels the same way. It just does. And look, I get it on the, but they don't follow the same rules. I'm the oldest child. I'm the oldest of 17 grandkids. I totally get what you're talking about. Nobody else got the same treatment that I did. I couldn't get away with anything because I had to be responsible. But everybody else can do whatever the hell they want. But no, Brian, you're the responsible one. You're supposed to be responsible. Well, you know what? These people are effing off. You know what? I'm very disappointed in you, Brian. Oh, God. Here we go.
I hate to break it to you.
I guess what I'm saying is that my problem isn't that... I think we're framing the argument that the issue is the filibuster, and that's not the issue. The issue is that you cannot reason with the other side no matter what side you're on.
Absolutely. I agree with
that
point.
That's the problem. That's the reason why we have gotten to the point where we're like, we have identified the filibuster as a thing stopping democracy. No, it is not. It is that you can't talk to the other side at all about anything.
Right. But in that fact that they are unreasonable and you cannot reason with them, the fact is we are using the filibuster as a hurdle for us to be able to do the things we want, where they just pick it up and move it off to the side and they're like, oh, yeah, you got to use that, but I don't have to use that.
I know it's a ridiculous situation.
I'm just saying I'm not saying get rid of the filibuster for everything. That's not what last night's vote was. Last night's vote was to remove it for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to pass that. And they won't even do that. So it's not like we're just saying getting rid of the filibuster altogether. It's not. But this is what we're doing. We're fighting with one hand tied behind our backs, Brian.
And I'm telling you, as the warm and fuzzy guy, I want to be able to be warm and fuzzy afterwards, because if you come through it on the other end, once you start, because this, when you have to have a solid core of what you actually care about and believe in, and to my core, you can call it fuzzy all you want, to my core, I believe in consensus and actually functioning democracy. And the reason why we're talking about getting rid of a filibuster is because democracy doesn't work correctly. And I realize that the filibuster was put in the first place to go and make democracy work correctly as well. I'm just saying that's a symptom of the problem, not the problem itself. And we also continually remind ourselves during the Trump presidency, Trump isn't necessarily the problem. He's a symptom of the larger problem that we're all screwed. I have data for this, but we have a lot of people calling. And I want to go, let's go with Profane Ronnie and we'll move up.
All right, Ronnie, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. So, for one, the filibuster is not even in the Constitution. It's a made-up thing that started with when slavery was ending. So all of these originalist Constitution Republicans, well, they're pulling that out of their backside. And so I'm not saying get rid of the filibuster because, that's too political. But it should be what it originally was, where you had to take the floor and talk against it. You know, let's bring these ideas to the floor and have a debate. Because what happens then is the American public hears these points from their representatives. And then these Republicans who are no longer running this coming election, their people say, hey, that's damn good legislation. You got nothing to lose. Vote for it. And they can buck Mitch McConnell and actually back good legislation. So let's keep the filibuster, but it has to be a talking one. You have to have debate. You can't just say no and walk away. You can't do that, because that's not political. You know,
it's also a lazy filibuster too. If you actually believe that you need to use it, at least go in and put your name on it and stand by the courage of your convictions.
Yeah, I fully support that, and we appreciate your call, Ronnie. And yeah, if we made it a talking filibuster, even for this, I would support that, because as of right now, Brian, I'm pretty sure a staffer in one of the U.S. senator's offices just has to send an email saying, yeah, Senator so-and-so is filibustering, and that's the extent of it. That is how
the office until 5 p.m.
That is how watered down this rule has become in the way that the Senate is using it now, because like Ronnie said, it's not in the Constitution. This is a procedural parliamentarian rule that was developed to help slow things down in the Senate, and I understand that U.S. senators pride themselves on that, the fact that they are they're this cooling saucer for
the
legislation,
most deliberative body.
Yes, the most deliberative body, exactly, and they pride themselves on that.
We used to wear wigs,
and it's a very exclusive club. There's only 100 of them, but the fact of the matter is, Brian, in the Declaration of Independence, in order to form a more perfect union. That is what we're striving for, a more perfect union. And my stance on it is, if that's what we're striving for, sometimes you're going to lose some of the arcane rules that you no longer need to use, and maybe it's time for the filibuster to go. But I do support Ronnie's point that if we made it a talking filibuster, that would appease me for the time being.
Yeah, and again, please understand, I'm not making the argument that this is something that we have to keep. Oh my goodness, how horrible it is that we lose it. Yeah, I totally understand that it was introduced during slavery. Yeah, I totally understand the basis behind it. My point is, it's not the specific filibuster that's screwing us. It's partisanship. Political partisanship is worse now than it has ever been. Congressional party unity is more than it ever has been. Statistically, basically since Newt Gingrich, we have a law. If you want to learn about how democracy really the root of when it really started going bad, the Atlantic has a great piece on Newt Gingrich. Point being, since
I don't know.
I
draw a straight line back to Roger Ailes working in the Nixon White House and him never wanting that to happen to another Republican again. That's where I draw the line back to. But I contend you could also draw a line.
But
to
at least
Gingrich.
This data point, the data that I'm looking at went from 1956 up until the first couple years of the Trump administration, and basically it essentially says that it suggested that government somewhat worked, like people would vote for things like, you know, keeping the lights on and stuff like that. But, you know, really partisan stuff wouldn't really work too well, which is the whole point of the government. That's how the government's supposed to work, right? Well, since then, it's been to the point where it's just party line vote on almost everything. And it's gotten to the point where nobody votes against their party or their caucus at all. And that's bad. That's bad for democracy, and that's bad for both sides, for sure. And I hate to say both sides. I love that. Both sides are, both sides. We got some time left for one more call.
Yeah, my blood's boiling a little bit, but let's get one more call in before the break.
One more call. Let's go with Dick in Madison. How you doing, man?
Good. Well, you know, you asked early on about what do they stand for. Well, look at Ron Johnson. He stands for absolutely nothing. He's admitted it. He said, what did he say? I'm not so sure my time here has been well spent. And as for what they stand for, you know that age-old saying, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything? They proved that in 2016 when they went with their cult leader. And they're proving it every day that they keep on backing this nonsense about he won and that Biden's illegitimate and on and on and on we go.
Yep. And you know what? I wish it wasn't so.
They stand for the filibuster. At least right now, they want to keep it. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. We got one more segment left in the day. Give us a call, 844-967-2789.